We are here, episode 17, with Change of Pace, with Masad. Masad, how are you doing, man?
I'm good, man. How's it going?
I'm very good, man. Obviously, we're recording live on stereo. Tune
Just
in.
lost you.
That's cool. If you want to tune in on, if you want to be part of the episode, all you have to do is be download stereo, and then you can literally send voice messages, so you can literally be a part of the episode, which is a sick thing to do. Massad, very briefly before we get started, talk to us about Change of Pace for the people who aren't aware as much.
So change of pace is something that we started in February of 2019. It's basically internet radio for Pakistan cricket fans, and we do internet radio commentary for all the Pakistan international games, the Pakistan Super League, the National T20 Cup. And that's complemented now with a website that has a bunch of articles, features, some quizzes, and just some insights. And we're obviously on social media and change of pace 414. That's our Twitter handle. But yeah, but the most important part of Change of Pace is it's chat community, because during the games, our website has a chat room that we source comments off of, where people come in and discuss the game. And over there, unlike a lot of other social media networks, your clout, who you are, whether you're professional doesn't matter. It's just how good your opinion is. So I think the strongest standpoint of Change of Pace right now is definitely the community that we're building.
Same thing that I love about what you guys are doing. I feel like, you for the Caribbean, for example, you have the Caribbean Cricket Podcast, the guys over there who are doing an amazing job. And you guys are sort of the representatives for Pakistan in that sense. And the whole keeping up with the score and then being on Twitter is a really cool concept, which I love. So, yeah, for those guys who want to be a part of the Pakistan, be a part of the Pakistan community, the Pakistan cricket community, make sure you follow these guys. They're doing a very, very sick job. But we're going to get straight into the episode. Pakistan, South Africa, a great test, very, very
Great
interesting
test.
test. Talk to me briefly overall how you felt about the test before we get into the nitty-gritty.
First of all, it's just really nice to win a test match, because I'd forgotten how that felt like. It'd been a whole year since Pakistan won a test match, and that's not really too much to Pakistan's fault, because we had some very difficult away tours. I thought we did very well in England, but just didn't get that right result because of a couple bad sessions, or just one bad session, if I'm being honest. And then we went to New Zealand, which was basically New Zealand's best ever side in the history of their cricket. So, and we have a very young bowling lineup. So coming to Pakistan, winning a test match, I felt that was really great. What was also really heartwarming to see for me was two debutants. Well, not debutants, but Noman Ali on debut doing really well, picking up a five for. Fawad Alam scoring 100 in Karachi. That's his hometown. I'm from Karachi. It was just all really nice to see. Imran Butt, I know he didn't score too many runs in either of the innings, but it was just nice to see him out there, because he looked the part. And in the first innings, he got a really good delivery to be dismissed. In the bowling, still, I'm a little bit worried. I'm a little bit worried about our fast bowling. I don't see how we're going to get 20 wickets through our pacers. That's not to the fault of their ability. It just might be the lack of experience and the tender age that they're at right now.
Yeah, I agree. And then it's also the whole factor of, South Africa, barring the World 11 series, where Du Plessis, Morne Mokgo, Hashim Amla were here, and the PSL, where most of the players who are there aren't really in the South Africa squad. It's been about 14 odd years since South Africa's been in Pakistan, which is, it's a big thing in itself.
It is important to talk about that. First of all, it's great that they finally come through. I think this sets a precedent for everybody else to come through. There really aren't a lot of excuses now not to tour Pakistan. But speaking of South Africa, I thought they were a lot better than a lot of people are making them out to be. The first innings was a horror show for them. 220 was just not good enough on that Karachi wicket. However, I thought their bowling, especially their pace bowling through Rabada and Ortia and Ngidi, was superior than Pakistan's. So they've got a lot to look forward to. I think on the Pindi wicket, that offers a lot more pace, we're looking at a much better South African side.
100%. We're going to get through, like we said. For the people listening on the show live, you can send voice messages. We got our first one. Let's quickly play it.
Musa!
Okay. I don't know this man, but he might know me.
We get that a lot, Dory. But let's get into the nitty gritty. Day three, obviously, is when I did day one and two with Aaron, or the cricket connoisseur, as people know. We had a good conversation about that. And, you know, I think we finished it with Hassan Ali and Naman. Both not out. We predicted what kind of score we think Pakistan. Pakistan were at 88 run lead by the point they were going into day three. I predicted personally they pushed for 40 more. Aaron predicted around 50 to 60, making them a sort of 140, 150 lead. They actually ended up putting about 158. How did you feel Pakistan would have done, obviously, with Hassan, Naman and Yasir left? Hassan and Naman both not out. Naman doesn't exactly have amazing batting stats to show for his career, but Hassan Ali does in limited overs, and Yasir Shah obviously has that anomaly of 100 in Australia. How did you feel Pakistan would have pushed with that lead? Did you expect the lead to be as big as it was?
Do you mean the first innings, the first innings lead, the 378 that we got?
Yeah.
So after the Fawad Alam and Azhar Ali partnership, where, you know, Azhar got that 50 and Fawad went on to get 100, I expected a little bit more from Rizwan. It's also really important to factor in Fahim Ashraf here, because that 378 is not possible without his 64. It came at a very decent pace, the strike at about 77 in a test match. It's pretty healthy. I didn't expect much from Hassan. The reason why, because even the 100 that he scored in the Kadazam Trophy final was a bit of an anomaly, considering that it came very quickly, a lot of boundaries. At the test level, you sometimes need a little bit more patience. Now, that doesn't mean that Hassan doesn't have that ability. I just think often he sells himself short. So he needs to apply himself a little better, because I think he's a lot better batsman than we actually. He's an average of 15 in test cricket. He should be averaging at least 20, 25. I think he's a lot better. Yasir Shah, that's an interesting one. Again, a strike rate of 103 in that innings. He carried the bat. So that's, I think, Pakistan's tail, you know, with, I think, Yasir got 38, Naman got 24, Hassan got 21. Fahim, if you want to add him to the tail, I don't think he's a tail ender at all. But if you want to, he got 64. I was pleasantly surprised, you know. I was quite optimistic about our chances. I thought we were going to get to 350, 330, but the fact that we got to 380 was quite remarkable for me. It was very pleasing. However, it does come with a bit of a pinch of salt, because more often than not, even if you include the England series, the New Zealand series, and now a test match at home, the bulk of our runs are coming after number four. It's not an indication of a good test side when the bulk of your runs is coming after number four.
Yeah, I agree. We looked at the New Zealand series. Mohammad Rizwan was about 750s in a row at that point. We had Fawad Alam's as well, with, you know, Pakistan. I think the middle order is where Pakistan seems to be carried when we're in our worst positions. The top order really is something to stand out. Obviously, we've got that Azhar 90 in the New Zealand series at the final test, and obviously he's 50 now. But, you know, I think both Barber being out in that series, he didn't exactly pitch in there, but, you know, it's one of those blips in his thing. And, you know, Imran Butt is sort of covering for Imam, so... the top order is really lacking. That is not a great sign, but it's good to see, in a sense, that the middle order is capable. That, you know, we have three batsmen there who can really dig in and push for those final runs where we really do need it. So that was good to see. Let's talk through then other things. Naman Ali on debut just broke a few records. First Pakistani left arm spinner to take a 5-wicket haul on debut. Fourth Pakistani spinner to take a 5-wicket haul on debut. 12th Pakistani to take a 5-wicket haul on debut. And then, you know, I actually went into the test a little bit pessimistic about him, and not necessarily to do with his ability, but more so to do with why he was replaced. I mean, it was more Mohammad Nawaz, if anything, but the whole Zafar Gorham situation. I want to quickly get your thoughts on that. Do you think, or do you have a reason that I probably missed out on why Zafar Gorham was left out of the squad in the first place, but now he's obviously been included in the T20 one?
So in sport, I'm a big believer of the fact that you put your best 11 out, whether you're Frank Lampard at Chelsea or whether you're Misbah Al-Haq with the Pakistan team. And as much as I love Zafar Gorham, and I think he's a great batsman and he's a handy bowler, simply put, Pakistan needed 20 wickets to win this test match, and Noman Ali is a better bowler than Zafar Gohar. It's as simple as that. And when it comes to left arm spin, it doesn't mean that Zafar is not going to have a future in this team, especially with the way he performed in that one test match in New Zealand and the way he's done in the domestic season and the way he can bat. There's definitely a space for him in this squad in the future, and him being dropped, and I say this with air quotes, because in Pakistan, dropped usually indicates the end of a career. More often than not, you're just rotating players where they seem best fit, right? So fit for purpose squads are important. Noman was fit for purpose. As for his performance, I'm a big believer in cricketing stories. Now, you'll probably get a lot of people on your show that will give you a bunch of statistics and stuff, and that's great because sports needs that. But for me, results in sports is all about stories. And more too often in Pakistan cricket, I feel that we've romanticized the 16-year-old, 70-year-old coming through, off the streets playing tape ball cricket, and then in Australia or England bowling to, you know, test match batsmen. That for me has happened way too often. So with Noman, he's a proof of concept to the Pakistani domestic system, because he played in the Pakistani domestic system for about 10 years, more than 10 years. He's 34 years of age, started around late in his mid-20s. He's got a bucket load of wickets in that system, and now he's coming through and proving himself on the international stage. So it's a bit of a vindication of the Qaidazm Trophy and a vindication of the PCB. So I feel like Noman's story needs to be romanticized so that people understand that coming through the system is just as good, or actually even better than coming through as. Now, that doesn't mean that if you're 17 and haven't played first class cricket, you shouldn't be in the team. If you're good enough, you're good enough, like Muhammad Amir in 2008-9 was. But yeah. Sometimes you need to pay heed to the people that actually take that systematic route as well.
Yeah, 100%. And I will talk about some of the other bowlers. You know, second innings, South Africa had quite a bit of a job to do ahead of them. They got 2-5, 2-4-5 all out. We've left out, obviously, Mohammed Abbas, his strike rate. I think it was his strike rate was just going way too high. That's what Mohammed Naseem mentioned. We didn't have Naseem Shah, who probably fits Rawat Bindi more than anything. Do you think that, you know, Noman Ali took the opening wicket. He got Aidan Markram out, who was really getting a start. Yasir Shah took the other openers. The top four batsmen were all got out to spinners. Do you think that we're going to be struggling? Like you said, we have a problem with our pace attack. We've got Darvish Khan, we've got Seamus coming through, but I feel like there's just something missing, and Shaheen doesn't always fit that role, especially with the newer ball as well.
I was very disappointed in the test match that Shaheen Afridi have. That might be because I've put him on a pedestal personally. When in the past, the year 2020, the Shaheen Afridi has in all formats with the right and red and white ball, I thought he was Pakistan's best bowler by some margin, and also one of the top bowlers in the world. Way he bowled in England, the way he bowled at the PSL, the way he bowled in the T20s, he was just extraordinarily good. And I say that because he was also 18 and 19 years of age. So it's not just his ability and skill, but the maturity that he had on display alongside that. So for me, that just a massive tick box next to his name. But then he underperformed in New Zealand. He had a bad tour and he had a bad test match here. And so we need to put into context the fact that he is still 19 years of age. So there's a long way for him to go as a fast bowler. Waseem Akram famously said that a fast bowler's body actually develops at the age of 25. So, you know, there's still a long, long way to go to the peak, I think, of Shaheen Afridi. As for our fast bowling, I think Hasan Ali coming back is a massive win for Pakistan, because Shaheen lacks the ability to bowl with the old ball at the moment. I think he'll develop that, but right now he might not. He's definitely not as good as Hasan. In Pindi, I think Shaheen will be on the money with the new ball. I have no doubt. One bad test match, I'm not going to rule him out because of it, because he was good with the new ball in New Zealand too. It's just that he didn't get too many wickets. You also have to factor in some of those drop catches. Now, there is a conversation about dropping one of the spinners for either Harris or Tabish. Personally, I'm not a big fan of Harris Rauf not playing red ball cricket in the domestic level and then walking into the test side. But then at the same time, with the earlier conversation we had about picking your best 11, Tabish Khan, at his age and his speed, if we were having this conversation 5 years ago, he'd be a shoo-in. He'd probably be ahead of even Naseem, etc. But now he's not that same guy. I mean, his numbers are still good, but it's not, he's not crescendoing. His career is not crescendoing. In fact, I would say it's in the twilight. That's a very unfortunate story, but you're out here to win test matches, not to hand out debuts. So I think it'll be a very similar 11 because Fahim Ashraf has been Pakistan's player of the tour for me in New Zealand. And bowled really well against South Africa too. The wickets might not show that, but he was very economical. And more often than not in test cricket, wickets are taken in bowling partnerships. So he complemented the spinners and he complemented his other pacers really well. So I think it will be a tougher contest than Karachi was because Noman and Yasser might not be as vocal on the Pindi pitch. But that also means that it's going to give Shaheen Afridi and Hassan Ali, even Fahim Ashraf, more room to express themselves.
Yeah, that's true. You talked about winning test matches and not necessarily handing out debuts. I want to quickly touch on Abdullah Shafiq. He was reduced from the 20 to the 17-man squad. He wasn't part of the 17-man squad. But, you know, I had a bit of a rant about it in the preview episode with Will Burford. And I talked about, you know, the consistency where Pakistan gives out their debuts is very, very off, in my opinion. You know, we're talking about someone who's played 40, 20 internationals. One, he got 43 or 41 on not out against Zimbabwe and then a really low scoring 3 against New Zealand. He's had one first-class innings, 133. Where do you stand on that? First, I'm sure you probably agree that he didn't deserve the test call-up in the test camp in the first place, but where do you stand on Pakistan's sort of selection consistency? Because we're looking at that, and then you can flip the script and you've got someone who, like, Imran Butt, who was actually made to open with 60-odd test matches, first-class games to his career. And then you flip that to the bowling, and we've got someone who's taken 500-plus first-class wickets in Darbish Khan. So I'm like, the consistency is very, very off. Where do you stand on all of that?
Well, let me break it down into pieces, right? First of all, Pakistan's chief selectors have not been consistent. We've had about 4 of them in the past 3 years. And Mohammad Wasim, this was his second tour as a selector. So I see, his first squad as a selector because the New Zealand team was Mizba's team. So I like the transparency that he attempted to show. I'm not saying that he was successful in showing it, but he attempted it, which is better than his predecessors. So that was good. Second thing, squads under COVID-19 are actually a lot larger than they need to be. Usually, if you're playing a test match at home, you have a 15-man squad, right? So that means when we were traveling to England, we took 25 players. When we're traveling to New Zealand, we took 25 players. That means that there are players in that squad that the PCB management knows are not going to get any game time. They are either taking them for experienced tour. They are either taking them to play against some of the A games, some of the list games, or are working on them for the future. And that's what I want to talk about Abdullah Shafiq. Now, Abdullah Shafiq is still a very young man. So I think that Mohammad Wasim is having him in the squad did not mean he was going to be selected. It just meant that he was going to spend a little bit of time with the Pakistan team. And I think for somebody like Abdullah Shafiq, that's actually very helpful in the future. That sets him up really well, especially when he gets game time with the likes of Wahab and Harris and Hassan that have already been around the Pakistan circuit. Now, the last thing that you mentioned, Darbish Khan and Imran Butt. Now, they both have prolific first-class careers, but Imran Butt started his first-class career a lot earlier than batsmen usually do, which is why, because a few people leave it on Twitter, and Twitter has a lot of opinions. Some of them are well-founded. Some of them they don't make sense to me. They said because the argument was also towards Saud Shakil saying, Imran's got an average of 34. Saud's averaging over 50. Why hasn't Saud been picked? First of all, if you pick Saud, you would have had Azhar Ali open the batting, and you don't want to try to fix what's not broken. Azhar Ali is actually in good form right now, right?
Yeah.
Now, and also, the second thing is Imran's career is actually split across two phases. He debuted in first class cricket at around 18 or 19, which means that which is very, very tender for a batsman. You don't have the maturity to play red ball cricket then. So considering now that he's 26, about to hit 26, 25 and a half, he's got 6 years of cricket under him. 6 years of cricket. That's why his average is 34. If his career started at 24 and he started playing from then maybe he would have had a healthier average. And that doesn't mean that Saud's Pakistan career is over before it started. It just means that Imran's call-up is warranted. However, for Darbish Khan, he should have been in the side, or he could have been in the side. Let's say we had a conversation 4 years ago, right? And we say, okay, 4 years ago, where the hell is Tabish Khan? Why is he not in the team? But then you pick up the Pakistan team sheet and you've got Muhammad Amer, you've got Wahab Riaz and Hassan Ali and well, not Shaheen Afridi, but you've got these three or four big name pacers and quality pacers. You have to ask yourself, where is Tabish going to fit? Does that mean that Tabish is a bad bowler? No. But does that mean that Tabish is good enough to play for Pakistan? Yes, sure. But the conversation goes back for best starting 11. And is Tabish better than Amer, Wahab, Rahat Ali at that point had some phenomenal series in the UAE, even Imran Khan Sr. And Tabish just wasn't ahead in that pecking order. Now, why? Because maybe his abilities weren't showcased correctly because he played his numbers were mixed up in formats. He wasn't playing consistently enough. A lot of the management around him was poor, no doubt. But the point that I'm trying to make is that Tabish could actually, even being good doesn't mean that you're going to play for Pakistan, right? You have to be exquisite. You have to be the best of the best. You could ask Mohammad Sami, you know, ask some of the bowlers that were around Shoaib Akhtar when he burst onto the scene. Now, it's just how it works in cricket. Yeah. There's only 11 people that are going to play.
Talk to me through. I want to ask about Pakistan's, you know, our top order, middle order, Fawad Alam. We'll actually touch on Fawad Alam. You probably have as much feeling as we have about, as me, Aaron, Will, whenever we talk about him. When we talk about someone like Fawad Alam, given the context of how he came around, scored that 100, he's now 200 since coming back to the Pakistan side. And, you know, you just can't be mad at the guy. How do you feel his importance now? Because we're looking at, actually, I want to get your opinion first. Fawad Alam, somebody mentioned, I think it was Jared Kimber, when they were talking about Fawad Alam's story, that the number five position is where he really did excelled at. While Fawad Alam came on the scene, we also had someone like Misbah Haq. And he had a very, very long career. And then we had Asif Shafiq, who was here and there, but he could really retain his space because of the amount of experience he had. First of all, I want to take your take on that. How much politics do you think there really was in Fawad Alam's selection in the first place? And secondly, how long do you see him playing for? I personally, he's what, 36 years old. If he carries on the form he does, if he keeps producing innings like these that we genuinely do need a lot of the time, because I feel like Pakistan wickets fall very, very quickly within, 20, 25 overs. Pakistan can lose a hell of a lot more wickets than other squads. Where do you see Fawad Alam's future in the next, you know, 3-4 years potentially? Do you see him retiring maybe around the same time that someone like Yunus and Misbah has?
Why not? The precedent has been set. Fawad Alam looks as fit as anybody else in that squad, probably even more fit than some of the less fit members of our team. And we saw in Misbah Haq and Yunus Khan that even when we had those, under Mickey Arthur, there used to be beep tests for the team, and they used to score amongst the top percentile in that squad. That squad had the likes of Shaan Masood and Babar Azam and Shadab Khan, who are very, very fit athletes, and Misbah and Yunus were outscoring them. So if Fawad can maintain those fitness levels, he could bat till 42, 43. Why not? I see no problem in that happening. And in terms of his ability, he's got a stance that is very difficult for people to find out. You saw that with Steve Smith in the summer in the summer before last, where England were trying to get him LBW. It just wouldn't work. He looks like he's susceptible to the LBW, but it's not actually true. And the same thing was for the great Shivnarine Chanderpaul. Fawad's stance is a bit more pronounced than both of them. But it's, again, becoming very difficult for fast bowlers to find him out. And same for the spinners. Spinners, for somebody who's grown up in Karachi, are basically just eat and drink for him. And speaking of the politics behind Fawad, it really is a very curious case because when you talk about politics and selection or politics in the workplace in general, it usually comes from a certain manager or a certain place of power. But Fawad had been ignored for such a long period that transition of power happened about 4 or 5 times. So it wasn't just the fact that he was ignored by one management or one coach or one captain. You know, the last time he was picked was Misbah Haq in 2014. So you had Safraz, you had Misbah, you had Afridi, you had Hafiz, you had Malik for a while. Those are just the captains and coaches. You had Waqar, you had Mickey, you had Mohsin Khan. You had a couple of other guys, and they all collectively chose to ignore Fawad. Now, you can, maybe the root cause is the fact that it's a mental thing where Pakistan fans and Pakistan administration feels like, oh, okay, Fawaz's technique is just not good enough. But you, there's only so much you can do to ignore an average of 65 plus in first class cricket, no matter how bad your system. Those are immense numbers, and I see no problem in him continuing for the next 6 years. He could bat at 5 or 6. I think 5 is better for him. I agree with Jared on that. So it's a great thing for Pakistan to have stability in the middle order is awesome.
Sick. And we obviously we finished the first test. It's a 2-test series. We'll be finishing up around now as well. Pakistan's second test, Rawalpindi. Where do you see, first of all, do you think the same 11 is going to be played? I personally think that, you know, I don't see any issues in the current 11 at all. I think Imran Butt just needs more time. People are making stupid arguments, like you said on Twitter, about, you know, should Imran Butt be played in the second test? I'm like, come on, the guy's on debut. Like, did you drop Alistair Cook on debut? Did you drop Crowley on debut if he did have a bad performance? It goes the exact same way.
Cook got 100 on debut, though.
All right. But it just goes silly arguments like that. But you know, Abid Ali, someone who's not in immense form, he was hitting around 20s most games in the New Zealand series. I still think he has a hell of a lot to show. I think it'd be sad to see if Imran Haq comes back and something happens to Abid. I think he has a lot more to show for him. His technique is very good, he's mentally very strong. He's had spells at the end of the day where he's had to play people like Neil Wagner, who are incredibly hard to face. And he's battled those, and he just kind of loses his wicket to soft dismissals. So, Arbid's, you know, still very much a great player to keep in my opinion. I still think he's got a long way to go. Azhar Ali, Barber seems to be okay. Fawad, Muhammad, and Rizwan and Fahim Ashraf looks like a very, very strong middle order. And then our seam attack, which I don't think are probably going to be making any change to. Hasan Ali, Shaheen, we've got Darbish Khan, who I don't think is going to make his 11 to the 11 for the next test. Where do you stand on the selections for the next test?
Unchanged for me. If I was actually going to make a change, I'd make it for the Karachi test. I would have played Muhammad Nawaz instead of Fahim Ashraf to give us an extra spinning option on that track. But the thing was that Fahim was coming off such a great series that it didn't make sense to drop him either, as you saw after he got that 64. So I think in Pindi, we're going to need the extra pace of Fahim Ashraf. So I would go unchanged. Speaking of Imran Butt, Abid Ali, they both are potentially great batsmen for Pakistan. Imran has the technique for it, and so does Abid. Abid has shots all around the wicket. I don't judge Pakistani batsmen when they go to New Zealand because a lot of people are quick to do that. But the fact remains that very few Pakistani sides have gone to those countries and toured well. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't look to improve. It just means that that shouldn't be the final nail in your coffin. I would go as far as saying that it was a little harsh to drop Sean Masood for the home test. Now, I know people will come at me with because of that, because Sean's scores have been fairly dismal since the 153 he got in England. But I know for a fact he would have scored a lot of runs here in Karachi and Pindi. But so where exactly is... It's something that I don't have the answer to. A lot of people don't, because if you're dropping somebody in there because of how they performed in New Zealand, then a lot of batsmen would be dropped. Imran, if he was batting there, would be dropped. Abid would be dropped. So that conversation changes. So then why did we just put Sean under the guillotine? Now, that's why I'm a little skeptical about that decision too. However, silver lining, I think Imran Butt looks a very complete batsman here. And first innings dismissal, I don't blame him at all. It was a great delivery. Second innings, he has a little bit. That was a bit of a fault. Batsmen that grow up playing cricket in Pakistan do have the inclination to play a lot more shots each delivery, which will be fine. I think Pindi is a true wicket, and I think Imran or Abid or maybe even both will come good.
Cool. Personally, I think that's the same thing with me. I don't think they should be changed to 11. That kind of covers everything. Do you have any additional thoughts on the way South Africa or Pakistan played in the first test and any thoughts of it going into the next one? We talked through, we haven't really touched on South Africa as much, but we looked at a top order that didn't look too bad, to be honest. Aidan Markram, Dean Elgar, they're coming off, you know, South Africa's coming off of a successful Sri Lanka series. Van der Dusen did get a kick on in the second innings. Faf du Plessis, Quinton de Kock, they're interesting cases. Faf du Plessis didn't score as much, but he got that 199 in Sri Lanka. And Quinton de Kock, someone who looks like he's a little bit a little bit, you know, shaky under pressure of being a captain. What's your take on that very quickly?
You know, Mike Haseman was very cruel to Quinton de Kock in his post-match comments, even on Twitter. I have never seen Haseman that worked up. And he was like, you know, captains are born, not created. If national sides need to have proper leaders. And that was all directed to Quinny. And I think the way Quinton de Kock handled himself in the post-match conference, that was a little bit of that was merited, because you don't, he wasn't present in the moment. He wasn't there to kind of explain his decisions. And that's the media side of things. Let's talk about his performance on the field. First of all, the way he was dismissed in the first innings, that is unacceptable for a captain. They were not 300 for two. They were in trouble at that point when Quinton chose to play that shot. Second thing is, he really underbowled his best bowler, who, in my opinion, was Lungi Ngidi in the second inning. And they kept toiling away, and every time Ngidi would get the ball, he would look to create something, but he only bowled about 8 or 9 overs by the time Pakistan had taken the game away from South Africa. So a lot of skeptical decisions from Quinton de Kock. I think a leadership change for South Africa. You also have to put into perspective right now that their board is really in big trouble right now. It's basically non-existent at this point. So the whole pocket, the South African national side, Kolpak 2 years ago, board, having to deal with this now, this entire ruckus that is around their cricket. It's not easy. It really isn't. Faf du Plessis willingly gave away this captaincy, but I'm not too sure how willing Quinton de Kock was to take it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and which is ridiculous. As a Pakistan fan, I know every single Pakistan player would love the Pakistan captaincy. So I'm not sure. I'm not saying that they're all capable, but I'm just saying everybody would take it on with a lot of pride. And that doesn't mean that Quinton de Kock is not proud to play for South Africa. But I'm very doubtful about how much he wanted to be captain. It doesn't seem that he wanted it too much.
Yeah, we talked through, you know, some of the ways they went about their reviews. I think the third review in their first innings, he didn't consult anybody. He kind of like shakily put up the T sign. Same for the first two. There wasn't a huge amount of communication going around. And some of them, you know, even Lungi Ngidi, if you talk about South African fast bowlers, I said this, Aaron as well, they've had someone like Rana Falanda, like Adil Rashid, who they will PR anything that hit the legs. And surely, you know, someone like Quinton de Kock would understand that even if Lungi Ngidi isn't appealing, then surely there's a case to be gone not to use that review at the time. So for me, I think Quinton de Kock is, like you said, I'm sure he would love to be captain, but I don't think right now is the time. I feel like Quinton de Kock right now, as of now, he's got plenty of years ahead of him. He comes across as someone who's, wants to just play as a batsman. He wants to fulfill that role as a keeper batsman. Yeah, exactly. And I think captaincy just added a bit of pressure where it's not needed. Quickly, while we're finishing off, last question. Who do you think, if Quinton de Kock's captaincy doesn't last, who do you think is the next captain for South Africa? Do you think it could potentially even go back to Faf du Plessis, or do you see someone else taking that role?
I'm very surprised that Dean Elgar was not considered in the first place.
Yes.
I think Dean Elgar, in his mid-30s, has played a lot of test cricket for South Africa. He's committed to this team. He's performed decently for this team. I think he is a natural next best fit for me.
100%. Well, that's it from us. This is a Pakistan-South Africa first test reflection. Asad, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
For you guys who want to check out any more of his content, like I said, Change of Pace, they're doing a very, very sick job. Live commentary during the games for PSL, international cricket. A lot of Twitter conversations that I love to be part of, and some interesting statements from Pakistan fans for you guys to check that out. So this has been episode 17 of the Cricket Talks podcast. Make sure you stream it. Check out my other ones. We had a day one and day two reflection with Aaron. I had the preview episode with Will Burford. We should be having another preview one going into the second test, hopefully. But I've been Mo. This has been Massad. Thank you for coming on, Massad. And check out the podcast. Check out the Instagram, Cricket Talks Pod, where we post all the media going into every episode. And I'll see you guys on the next episode of Cricket Talks. Perfect. Thank you, man.